Acclaimed integrative medicine expert, Dr. Holly Lucille.
Think well, act well, be well.
Inherently you.
Hi, folks. Thanks so much. This is Dr. Holly Lucille, and thanks for joining me for the new Inherently You podcast. I am so excited for today. Listen, I was on Facebook, and just briefly, and I saw one of the a quote posts for the most part, and it was it said, if you want to do one thing in this world to change something for the better, affect your children in a positive way. Said something like that. I'm totally paraphrasing. So I'm excited today because I have Allison Crystal with me. She is an occupational therapist and a clinical instructor specializing in pediatrics. So her clinical work and research, she has focused on sensory integration and self-regulation in children with behavioral and developmental disorders. Allison, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Now, I love occupational therapists because I have this story for you. I think what you do in the world is so incredibly amazing. My very first job out of nursing school was at this place called Harbinger. And it was community, it was a community treatment, assertive community treatment, ATC, in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So basically what we did is we got together, there was a team, it was a team approach, and we cared for mentally disabled adults in the community. And the cool thing was there were two nurses on the team, a psychiatrist, four or five mental health advocates, a clinical specialist, and an occupational therapist, and a vocational specialist as well. Yeah. And so
that's like a dream team.
it's a total dream team, because what we did with these adults that, you know, they would be 5150, or they were hospitalized for their safety or somebody else's safety, and then they were managed by just medication therapies only, right? And then they'd be stable and then released to the environment that contributed to them being hospitalized in the first place. So we would get people right out of that cycle, and then start to support them as we developed their lives, all aspects of their lives in the community. So it was so great to work with people like you and what you're doing with kids. I can't wait to hear more about it.
That's an incredible kind of program that you are involved in. And I think that's one of the things that really I've tried to kind of emulate in terms of the wraparound care. So it can't just be a nurse. It can't just be a therapist. It can't just be a physician. There really has to be, in order for folks with any sort of dysregulation issue, there really has to be kind of a team approach. So it's so great that you were involved in something even a while ago that really took that avenue. That's powerful stuff.
Yes, thank you for reminding me how long it was ago.
I was gentle with that.
Just for our audience, because we're going to talk a lot about behavior and play, and focusing on kids, because I think that's so important in the work that you're doing with kids that that are struggling developmentally is so important. Cool. But we could talk about behavior and play all throughout the lifespan, I'm sure. But
absolutely.
Specifically, the definition of occupational therapy and really how it relates to children in your practice.
That's a great question. And it's one that I get a lot, because I think there's a little bit of fuzziness between like OT and physical therapy and rehab in general, and how that really translates to behavior. So what I kind of like to sum up what I do, and OT in general looks at function. So we look at how disease, disability, disorder, imbalance affects someone's ability to function in their environment in the way that they are supposed to function. So I tend to, from a pediatric perspective, I tend to focus a lot on roles. So what are the roles of childhood? A child is a student, a daughter, a son, a sibling, a peer, a community member, a player. And then I look at, okay, where is their dysfunction in those roles? Is it in the role of student? So a child is not able to successfully complete that role of student because of either behavior or cognitive issues or whatever. Is it the role of peer, that they're not successfully able to navigate social relationships? So that's where I tend to start with kind of casting a wide net. Like, what are those roles, and what's the function in those roles that's really getting affected by whatever imbalance is kind of the root cause of what's underneath? So I think the definition of OT in general is helping folks overcome disability, disease, dysfunction in order to be functional and successfully complete the roles that they are required to do.
So that's lovely. Now, will you do me a favor? Repeat the roles of childhood that you just said. What do you feel like the roles of childhood are?
Well, I feel like the essential ones that we tend to focus on are the role of students. And I say that because that's often where I get the initial referral for treatment. Like, you know, mom and dad might have felt like something was amiss, but it was when those phone calls from the teacher started that we really got concerned, right?
Sure.
So the role of students is a really big one, not just from a diagnostic perspective, but also from a treatment perspective. And really, you know, it goes without saying that role is a lifelong role. So that's an important one. Also the role of peer. And that's another area where when we start to see a breakdown in socialization, the ability to feel connected to people their age, whether you're 5 or whether you're 15, right? So that role of peer, I think, is a really essential one. And then quite honestly, one that I tend to focus on as well is the role of son or daughter, because the environment of the family dynamic is so crucial for really fostering some of those self-regulation skills. So I think those are the three, the student, peer, and the son or daughter. And then there's more, you know, there's other important ones like player, someone on a team, or community member, someone involved in community stuff. But those three are the ones I really tend to navigate first.
Those are those core roles. And then, of course, you can individualize per your client. So sensory integration. Now, that's a term often heard associated with children and development in general. How and why is this relevant to kids and this dysfunction that you speak of?
Good. So SI or sensory integration is something that as OTs, we tend to think we have the monopoly on. It's something that we learn, that we teach, that we foster in our clients. And kind of the simplistic definition of sensory integration is we take in all of the environmental stimuli in those 5 senses that we learned in kindergarten, right? Like the 5 major senses. We take those in, we integrate them in our brain, and we act upon them in our environment. And sensory integration acknowledges that we have more than just those 5 senses. We have internal information from our gut, from our vestibular system, from our proprioceptive system, figuring out kind of how we feel in our own skin and where our body is in space. And so integrating all of that with those basic 5 senses, and then having an adaptive or functional or appropriate response in our environment is considered the goal of sensory integration. So when that goes awry, what we see is behavior that looks like kind of hyper-responsiveness to normal environmental stimuli. So sensory integration, when it's going well, it looks like someone that is adapted to their environment. When it's not going well, it looks a little quirky, like someone who is having reactions that don't quite fit the situation.
Yeah, so give me an example of a client that comes to you. What were some of the things that were noted by the parents? What were some of the things that were noted by the teacher? Because from what you're saying, and I tell you, I'm listening here. So sensory integration, you know, we've got our 5 senses to pay attention to, and then we've got our internal stimuli and our stimuli from the environment. I'm like, it's hard being a kid, right? There's a lot going on.
Right?
So there's a lot that can definitely go wrong or be dysfunctional in a sense. Well, tell me, just give me an idea of what that looks like for somebody.
Sure. Well, and the really interesting thing is that I'm actually getting a lot of adolescent and adult clients as well that are finding the more they learn about sensory integration and read stuff about kids, they're like, holy cow, this totally applies to me, and maybe this is affecting me too as an adult. So it really is a life thing, which is cool. But examples of stuff that we would see in childhood, one really simple one is that some kids tend to be very hyper responsive to touch. In other words, what would normally not faze a kid, for them, initiate kind of that sympathetic fight or flight panic response. So one particular thing might be a teacher who tells me, you know, when I line up all the first graders and they're all supposed to be back to back in that nice line when we're going to the lunchroom, and this kid accidentally gets brushed on the arm by a peer, he freaks out and we have a meltdown, or he gets aggressive, or he has like a temper tantrum, whatever. So there's a behavioral response to light touch, and that can come across. And then the parents might tell me, well, it's really funny that's happening at school because he can't tolerate the tags on his clothing, and he gets really aggravated if he he has to wear mittens or that sort of a thing. So that's one example of the tactile system being out of whack in that big picture of sensory integration. So we see behaviors that look like tantrums and aggression, and really it's a sensory integration issue.
Oh, that's great. Okay. So I'm sure that you see so much of this, because so much, I think, has evolved and changed. And especially you talk about play. Play has certainly changed in recent generations. How do you feel that this is impacting children's behavior?
I think if we look back to our ancestors and we look at how they played, we know from research that evolutionarily, kids played in a way that they interacted with their environment to mimic what they saw adults doing, which looked a lot like survival skills. It was running and chasing and climbing and
right.
foraging.
Being in the jungle.
Thing, right? Yeah, no doubt. Exactly. That's exactly what it was. And clearly, you know, if kids emulate parental behaviors now, it doesn't look like those kind of survival skills. But what that outdoor interaction with the environment did, and I would even go so far as to say that really in the last 40 or 50 years, it has evolved. And even how I played as a kid, we were much more interactive with our environment, our natural environment. We were risk takers. We would explore.
Oh, yeah.
We would be climbing. We would get all of those physical kinds of interactions that helped integrate those sensory systems so that when we had, you know, issues later on, it wasn't directly related to dysfunction. So I think play used to be a lot more physical, a lot more kids kind of navigating their own bodies within their environment. And now we're a lot more sedentary, we're a lot more screen-based. And those opportunities to develop that sensory system are really, really missing.
You know, it's so interesting. There's a couple things here that you're just provoking me to think about. First of all, you know, macular degeneration, or a lot of things where in my field, I all of a sudden start hearing of this new category, right? So as early onset, you know, cognitive decline or early onset macular degeneration. And I am thinking, well, this, I'm not just accepting that there's this new category of folks that are now, you know, privy to treatments for these things. I want to know the mechanism of why this is happening in a younger age. And a lot of times, you know, when you think about macular degeneration, you think about the fact that we're not moving our eyes anymore very much. Like,
yeah.
We aren't looking,
yeah,
you know, through the jungle and through the woods and like over ourselves or watching out for things. We're really just kind of right in front of us. And so we lose the exercise of those muscles. Therefore, we lose the circulation. Therefore, we lose the micronutrients that are needed. And so sometimes that's my sort of like, we've got to keep moving. And when I was a kid,
yeah,
I mean, I think about playing, not just to even hide and seek outside or kick the can, or teeping somebody's yard, you know, being
right,
able to navigate, you know, not being seen, or
yeah,
like all of those great games that we played outside and the physical exercise that was involved. And I had to use all of my senses, all of them. And then I also had to know when sort of dusk was coming, because that's when I needed to be home, right?
Yeah.
It was like, I was outside, and so I was aware of my environment in that way. And I agree with you. I don't think that is happening much. In fact, this got my attention. I was my mother-in-law lives down. She has a condominium in Redondo Beach, so it's just a bit down the highway for us. And so we were there over New Year's Day, and there was, you know, kids and families, and it was kind of on the cool side. So this, I saw this little baby. Well, it wasn't, I would say probably maybe 1 or 1.5, 2 years old, in a stroller being pushed by, I would assume it was his father. And the whole family was there. There was a dog, you know, this family, but the baby wasn't looking at like the people around, wasn't looking at the birds in the sky. The baby had a phone, had the parents' iPhone in front of him. And I just,
yeah,
I literally looked, and I like, I know that that's not right. This is your opportunity to be outside and look at things and look at the ocean and look at, you know, and having, and as you say, integrating that into what you're perceiving of the world you're growing up in. And there was
absolutely
nothing except that screen. And I just wanted to, you know, sometimes when I'm hiking or I see a woman who is holding her cell phone in her bra, I know that that's just not a great thing to do, because I have unfortunately helped diagnose a couple cases of breast cancer based on that exposure. And I badly stopped myself, but I wanted to go up and go, this isn't right. You have to stop this. Your child is missing out on so much good stuff right now.
Absolutely. Well, and I mean, Gerber is making attachments for iPads to strollers. No. Like, what's wrong with I couldn't agree with you more. And I think I really have to believe that parents are doing the best that they know how. And I think, you know, our younger gen, I have two kids who are in their teens, and the way that I raised my kids was certainly different the way that I was raised and so on and so forth. But I feel like the understanding for young parents now is that we want to keep our kids in one place and we want to keep them quiet. And if you walk into any toy aisle, it's all about how do we keep our kids occupied, quote unquote, with all of the stuff that you put in front of them. And that has definitely converged to electronics as well. So I think there's just kind of an epidemic, and it's parents that just don't know what the developmental implications are. Our milestones of development, crawling 40 years ago used to be a 4 to 6 month skill. It's now a 6 to 9 month skill.
Wow.
Because it's a combination of things. One is the Back to Sleep campaign, which has been a very good thing. But the other aspect of that is that we are keeping kids in the bumble seats underneath the mobiles, and we're keeping them stationary, and they're not exploring their bodies and environments even as young as 5 and 6 months. So it's definitely an epidemic, and we're seeing the behavioral implications once kids get to school.
Oh, I'm sure. And so to that point, do you feel oftentimes when you have a quote unquote client and you're focused on pediatrics, so you're focusing on the child, but in essence, the entire family, especially the parents, become the client?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the combination, first of all, of functional medicine and OT gives me a really unique lens that I can address the whole family dynamic and look at kind of root causes from not only a physiological aspect, but also from that environmental piece. And some of that is education. And a lot of that is teaching parents how to read the cues of their children's behavior and really kind of be detectives about what that behavior is saying their need is. So if I'm a kid who's climbing on the couches all the time and crashing into the dog and can't quote unquote sit still, what need is that kid addressing or trying to satisfy by that movement? And then on the other end of that, if there's acting out behaviors and things like that, kind of what's the underlying cause of that behavior? And that is definitely a family dynamic and all about recognizing kind of underlying patterns of behavior and socialization, I think, even within just that unique family situation.
I love that we're talking because I want folks to know that, you know, I know some of my friends who have children. I only have four-legged children, so I'm a pretty good dog trainer, so I usually don't have too much trouble, but I know some of my friends that have children and that are having difficult times with their behavior. They have a hard time even talking to me about it or asking for help, and I love that there are people like you, and I want to just say your website real quick, evolutionarytherapies.com, where people can find you. Allison Crystal is right there. evolutionarytherapies.com. But do you find that parents are sometimes feeling defeated and having a hard time asking for help?
Absolutely. I'm so glad you brought that up because there is a stigma of behavior in kids. And I think maybe even until I had my own kids, you know, I would see parents with kids in the grocery store that were acting out, and I would think to myself, I'm not going to have a child like that, you know? And we don't know until we're in that situation. But I think it's incredibly difficult for a parent to be able to say, I mean, I've had parents come to sessions and say, my 7-year-old literally beat me up last night. And that is so difficult because there's a stigma attached to parents. We expect, you know, children's behavior to be a reflection of their parenting skills. And that isn't the case, especially when there is underlying regulatory issues. So I really feel like when parents finally find that place where they can freely discuss how concerned they are about some of these things that are going on with their kid, and they hear from a professional that this is not a terrible parenting thing, this is a combination of what your child's brain is doing and what their body is doing and what their needs are and how we kind of become, you know, partners in this detective process rather than someone pointing a finger at parents for doing something wrong and creating, you know, negative behavior. So absolutely, I think that's a huge issue. And I would really encourage any parent that has, or any teacher, or anyone that interacts with kids, really, that feels like that behavior might be a symptom of something else, to really seek out folks that can understand it from a different perspective.
Well, and I love it, what your work, because, you know, you probably see it as much as I do. If they don't reach out and if they don't ask for help, or if they don't scratch their head and kind of just get curious before they get critical of the child, what happens is that child ends up being on a prescription medication and usually down a road of no return, because there's another prescription medication that comes on board. So you mentioned, and you are now currently completing a master's degree in functional medicine and clinical nutrition. And you mentioned how sort of your OT and this gives you this perspective. Tell me a little bit about that.
I think the whole thing about functional medicine, as you know, is looking at the root causes of disease. And when I look at children in my OT practice and I look at behavior as a symptom rather than an outcome, and then I look at behavior, if it's a symptom, what are the root causes from a functional medicine perspective of that symptom? I think it really gives me a unique lens into addressing what some of the easy, cast a wide net kinds of things are that we can do in terms of physiological health for the child, whether it be sleep patterns, whether it be gut health, which I've heard you speak about on several occasions as being so crucial to that behavior piece. But you know, whether it be nutrition, so we can look at the underlying sleep, nutrition, gut health kinds of things that can at least create a foundation on which we can apply some of those behavior solutions. So it's a nice combination that looks at it from kind of a 360-degree lens rather than just behavior and a fix, behavior and a fix. Go ahead.
No, please go.
But I think the rehab model is such a great one, but I also feel like sometimes we miss those underlying causes piece. So I think that's where the functional medicine combination can really help.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, you'll be like the triple threat, because when you think about it, when you started out talking about occupational therapy in the first place, it was truly all about function. And, you know, I think functional medicine has done such a wonderful job of branding themselves in the last 4 years, 5 years, where the consumers really know what function, or starting to really realize what functional medicine is. And I'd have to say, and Mark Hyman, Dr. Mark Hyman, kind of, he actually posted this somewhere, but it is the foundation of naturopathic medicine, which is, you're right, identify and treat the cause and treat the whole person and be that practitioner as teacher. And so you having that oversight in the functional area with functional medicine and then clinical nutrition, I mean, I can't tell you how many people come to my practice bringing their children for what they seem to have diagnosed, or the child has been diagnosed with ADD or ADHD. Yeah. And we deal with nutritional, I think, deficiencies, you're right, gut health, and also food, potential food sensitivities. And it is amazing how their behavior across the board changes when we eliminate obstacles to cure. Because we think about it always that, listen, the body, and young children's body especially, when they haven't been on this earth for very long, you know, it is truly, truly, truly meant to heal itself. And so we're always looking for, well, you know what, hey, well, what's in the way? Where are there obstacles? And if you know, I just always just constantly scratch my head, push my chair back, let's think this through. And it's the way that I love to practice that way, because I have a partner in crime, which is my client, and we just go at it until we get to that root cause. And I love that you're doing this for children, especially that children that have difficulties with development and behavior. It's so important. Sure.
Well, and I imagine in your practice, those huge fixes that you've seen not only helps the child, but then the entire family dynamic changes, right? When that stress of that behavior piece and that attention piece and everything else really dissipates because of your addressing the nutritional issues, I would imagine that the entire family stress level goes goes way down.
Oh. I think any time a child comes in and we get them further on the road to their incredible wellness, it affects the entire family. I mean, cases of atopic dermatitis, of eczema, because when there is a scratch itch cycle going on and a child is up at night because of it, I guarantee you that whole entire family is affected. And as soon as we get that under control, and by the way, I've been seeing more of the atopic dermatitis, I think because of our hygiene hypothesis. I think that we've been using those darn hand sanitizer things for way too long, and we aren't getting the bacteria that can feed our entire microbiome and our milieu that is, you know, that is so important for everything that we're talking about and then some today for everybody out there. And so I see more and more of that. But as soon as we get that scratch itch cycle under control, as soon as that sleep cycle starts to regulate again for children, the whole entire family is completely changed.
Absolutely. It's interesting you mentioned the atopic dermatitis. I have three kiddos with autism who are dealing with that now. And I couldn't agree more that getting to the underlying causes is huge of that, big game changer.
Yeah, and you know, I also think too, you and I would probably agree that a lot of these things are related. When you see the behavioral issues and when you see some physical manifestations, especially some skin issues, and we get down to that root cause, there's a lot of those interconnected, but you got to be able to pay attention. Allison Crystal, thank you so much for being here. Once again, you can find her at evolutionarytherapies.com, also on facebook.com/allison.crystal, and that's C-H-R-Y-S-T-A-L. This is Dr. Holly Lucille, and thank you so much for being here. This was sponsored by Inherently You. Actually, you can go to inherentlyyou.com to find out more about how to be really well in here. And if you're looking at me right now, I'm pointing right inside of me. So there's so much information out there, folks, but what's right for you? I'm going to help you find that out. All right, we'll talk to you soon.